McKenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. Good morning once again, and welcome to Happy Hour here. I have no idea.
Welcome to Checkered Report.
I know. Apparently, I bought new lips, and they're not working yet. I was just going to say, you could probably relate to that. I should have kept the receipt. All right. Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. I am Frankenberry. We've got ourselves another show, and we've got Jonna, who started with one story that we're not going to go into on the air because it'll just make us all angry. But she did say, instead of the story that'll make us all angry, she has a story that's, well, nicely disgusting.
It is.
I always love to start the morning with disgusting things.
Oh, without a doubt.
At least I think it's disgusting. It's actually so much so I thought about maybe not telling it because it's that gross. But here I am like building up this really gross story. And Frankenberry, you're probably going to fall asleep halfway through. And Carol's going to be like, oh, no, we've heard grosser from you. So I'll just tell you what happened, because it was one of those situations where it was like sometimes when you're dreaming and something bad's about to happen, but you're dreaming, so you're not awake, obviously, and you try to like scream or warn somebody, and in your dream, you know, the words aren't coming out of your mouth. It was kind of like that happening to me, but I was wide awake. So, okay. So, over the last weekend, I was, you know, kind of doing my usual, and I went to my nail salon. The nail salon I've been going to pretty regularly since like before I started my renovation. I'm not going to name their name. I like them. I appreciate them. They do a very nice job. They're reasonably priced. But what I'm about to tell you would turn you off from going there. And that's not the point of this story. So, okay. So just call it the nail salon. So anyway, I kind of have a little inside joke with the people there, because every time I go there, I get the same color all time. I never change it up. I don't go green for St. Patty's Day. I don't, you know, fall, winter, summer, doesn't matter. I have this color and it's like a purplish color. I like it. I go with it. I use it all the time. Okay. So some of you might be familiar with, there's a new way that you can get your nails done now, which is not like a liquid nail polish. It's a powder nail polish.
Yep.
And I'm a huge fan. You know, Frankenberry, I'm sure you're not familiar, but I am, because you use a liquid nail polish. I'm sure you do.
Yes. I am not changing up my Saturday night routine for anything.
No, you're old school that way.
Yes.
But the powder is, you know, a lot of women will relate that I think the powder is better for you. And it lasts a very long time. And I'm partial to the powder. That's the only thing I do. Okay. And the reason why that's important will become apparent in a minute. So
I know where it's going.
Over the weekend, I go to the nail salon, and instead of joking with me about me using the same color that I always do, one of the nail people says, oh no, we have a little bit of a problem. We've got very little of your particular shade of nail powder available, you know, and I'm going to do my best to squeeze out a manicure for you, but I'm just warning you that we have very little left. And I was like, you know, I can switch up if you want. They're like, no, we got this. We're totally going to get this done for you. And then when you come back, we'll have a fresh container of it. Okay, fine. So the procedure starts. Now, mind you, when you're a woman, Frankenberry, and again, you won't really relate to this, although you do have a little bit of a feminine side.
Carol, did you catch that subtlety? I won't really relate to this.
Maybe just a little.
Just a
smidge, you might. But I am one of those women who are very partial to, I like to have my toes and my fingers match. So I'll get the same color on, you know, on the tootsies as I do on my fingers. So,
of course, I completely understand.
And as I suspected you would. Now, this crap takes time. Okay. So when you're doing, usually you're doing your pedicure first and that takes a while. Then they move on to your nails and that takes a while. And each time you sit at a salon, when you're doing this, it can take two and a half hours. That's a big time commitment. But fortunately, you only have to go once every couple, 3 weeks. So I'm about, let's say a good hour and a half into this process over the weekend. Okay. Toes are done. Nails are halfway done. And they just so happen to be kind of doing my nails while I'm sitting in a pedicure chair. For those who are uninformed, the pedicure chair is a big fancy chair that kind of massages you while they're busy working on your fingers and your toes. So an hour and a half into this commitment, we're chatting away and she's trying to scrape up every little grain of this polish powder. When all of a sudden, I don't know what happened. She tripped, something fell. I don't know, but the jar of the, which may well have been like liquid gold powder because she only had very little left, falls from its location onto the floor below. Aww. when I'm not done. And it's a, you know, it's like a 3 foot fall or whatever. So it falls. Now in my head, I'm doing the calculus. I'm like, oh crap. Now we're either going to have to like find a color and put it over this. And now I'm not going to match, or we got to start all over. And that's going to be another 3 hour commitment in this chair. I'm doing all these calculations in my head while I'm not paying attention to what my nail technician is doing.
Yep. Scoop.
So she had a better idea. And while I'm panicking, she is scraping every single particle of this powder off the floor, putting it back in the jar, and then applying it to my nails.
So you got some bonus material in your nails.
Exactly. Ingenious.
And you know what? It was one of those things, like I was on the verge of like, no, ooh, you can't do that. Oh, but 3 hours, okay. It was one of those. And I just succumbed to the situation. And I've been trying to make myself feel better for a week. I'm like, all right, look, people eat bugs. Okay, number one. Number two, I've read all the articles that it's actually not a good idea to even use the powder at all, because people stick their fingers in the same powder that you're sticking your fingers in, and you know, stuff can travel. I don't know, whatever. It's not sanitary. And I do that all the time, and I've done it without incident for years, so I shouldn't really complain. Number three, I figure the part of the floor that it fell on was an area that you can't really walk because it was in between the two chairs, so human feet never got there, like, you know. So I'm trying to justify it kind of like that. But the long story short is it's been a week and I still have fingers and no fever.
okay, that's a bonus.
So nothing's growing.
In the end, I think it all worked out for the best.
Yeah, I think you're fine. And I'm glad she was able to so quickly adapt to what the situation presented her and, you know, was able to satisfy your fingers' needs.
Moral of the story is, if you're ever in a situation where your nail technician tells you that there's very little powder left, you should probably switch colors. Switch colors and not have to endure. I mean, it did bother me for like a few hours. I kept looking at my hands going, I've got, you know, dirt now shellac onto my fingernails. And it's going to be there for a couple of weeks because these manicures are 2-3 weeks apart.
Okay, hold on.
You got
on.
Some bonus material in there. Yeah,
hold on 1 second. I'm just taking notes. vibrating pedicure chair, switch colors if crap dropped on floor.
I compare.
You know what?
3 weeks between manicures. Make sure you bring a Kindle because you're going to be there for 2.5 freaking hours.
You got it.
Okay. And just learn how to read with your feet when you're doing your hands. All right, cool.
Yeah.
You are very, very, very funny. But let me ask you, have you ever,
riddle me this.
You have, what have you ever let fall on the floor and then either used, like stuck in your pierced ear hole or put in your pie hole? Or has there been anything, the 5-second rule in your lives, when has it applied?
Of course. 5-second rule applies almost every day to vitamins when I drop one on the floor.
Oh, and you put it in your mouth?
No, I take vitamins a different way, Jonna, kind of like a suppository. Yes. Yes, Jonna. A vitamin in my mouth, Jonna. Okay.
Break. Kiss my butt. Right now, okay.
Okay. Now, Jonna, that's really the last thing you should have said after I mentioned the word suppository.
Okay.
I do remember one time working in a restaurant, and it was a restaurant that also made gourmet pizza, and one of the guys had dropped the pizza that he was getting ready to put into the box. It slid off the, you know, pizza thingy onto the floor as I was walking in the back, and he started to pick it up, and I looked at him and I went, "Do not. 5-second rule does not count for the pizza." And he looked at me, he gave me a little smile, and then he went, "Okay," and he threw it away.
Oh. Well, that's what I got to say about the 5-second rule is going to be different depending on where I am. If I'm in my own home, I'm going to have a different potential reaction depending on what I potentially lost on the floor and its values to me. might be different than if I was, in a public restroom or something. And you know what I mean? That's right. That 5-second rule is subjective when I apply it. That's all.
And it also depends on what it is that you've dropped on the floor. You know, in my case, if I'm dropping a vitamin, it's not really picking up that much crap off the floor on the 5-second rule. You know, if I'm dropping a piece of buttered toast, that's a different story.
Well, that is true. And also along lines with what you said, Carol, if I'm at a restaurant, I mean, now this is coming from a woman who willingly let floor powder get stuck to her fingernails. But if I'm at a restaurant, even a nice restaurant, and something falls on the table, you know, like a chip, I won't touch it. I will not touch it. But, you know, here I am. If I lick my fingers right now, I'm licking, you know, something off the bottom of somebody's shoe, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's sealed, so you're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. It's like your polyurethane, that dirt. You're fine.
Yeah, exactly. So all sealed in.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not down with the floor stuff. Although in terms of vitamins, it's funny because I take vitamins every day too. And I have dropped the kind that are in a capsule, you know? So what I do then is I just pour out the contents of the capsule and won't eat the capsule.
You mean you don't just put the capsule in your hand and blow on it a little bit and then pop it in your mouth thinking you're blowing all the dirt off?
No, but, oh, I'm glad you mentioned the word blow, not for reasons that you think.
Hold on. I got a dollar bill around here somewhere. Hold on. Hey, Randy, you got a razor blade?
No, here's why. Because you reminded me of something else that I wanted to complain about in this genre. And again, sorry, Frankenberry, but sometimes we get on these beauty talks. And I know that you, as a man who needs very little help in the beauty department, that you won't be able to relate. But
I will take notes. Go ahead.
When you get your eyebrows waxed, it seems that 9 times out of 10, the person who's waxing your eyebrows when you're a woman will cool the wax off by blowing on it. And I have decided that I no longer like that practice, because when you blow birthday candles on a cake, like we learned during COVID, probably not a good idea to do that. It's germy. Well, if you're going to blow all over my wax and then slap that near my eyeballs, I know it's hot and whatever. And now I think I have to petition against blowing on hot eyebrow wax. What say you, Curly?
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I'll go with you there on that one as well, Jonna.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird, right? But they do it all the time.
Well, at least she's not doing it after she's applied it to your eyebrows.
Yeah, right, where she's blowing that close to your face.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, hard pass.
Yeah. But I had a clump of very hot wax one time, not recently, it was like a few years back. Somebody was, you know, waxing my eyebrows and they missed and it got all over my eyelashes. That was fun. Very fun. Yep. Yep. That is hard to get out. Yep. Without losing your lashes. Very difficult, but I did it.
Oh, you had to get it off? Oh,
well, I didn't trust anybody else not to rip out all my eyelashes.
Oh my God. That was a big fail on their part.
Huge fail. Huge.
Yeah. Did you get done free that day?
I'm sure I did. But also, thank God my eyes were closed. Right?
Oh, I mean, my God.
I know. The things we do for beauty, you guys really don't appreciate the crap we go through and the detriment to our lives and physical well-being.
I think we lost him.
You know, Jonna, look, I will say there are advantages to being single for as long as I have been, because I don't feel guilty now when you say things like that.
Well, let me just ask you point blank. And you may edit this out. I don't know. But do you manscape, Frankenberry? Yes or no?
Yes, I do. Not as often as maybe other guys do. But yes, I do. Thank you.
Do you use wax when you're manscaping?
Oh, my God. Doubt no.
Nope. Anyway,
what the hell is wrong with you? I'm not putting anything hot like that down there. Ripping it off. I might as well just use duct tape, for Christ's sake.
Tweezers? Oh, yeah, you could save yourself some money.
Do you use tweezers or simply a razor? Do you use Nair? Do you use any kind of...
No, I use no product. I just use hair clippers, and then I use a razor.
Clippers? Do you now?
I do. And I think the operative word here when you're using the clippers so you don't cut yourself is to make sure things are taut.
Oh, so you're ambidextrous too. Do you use shaving
works
cream?
Well with mirrors.
No, I just use whatever bar soap I have in the shower.
Wow.
I don't use, the only product I use at all, Jonna, in my bathroom is toothpaste and shampoo. That's all I have in my bathroom.
Well, that's a lie because you also have soap. You just said so.
No, product like in a bottle, Jonna.
Jonna, don't you understand? It's not a product unless it's in a bottle.
Damn straight.
Oh, such a difference between men and women.
Well, no. So, and look, I got to give him credit, right? So there's an element of simplifying your life. Like if I counted the amount of product that is in my designated area of storage in our bathroom compared to what Frankenberry has, I kind of admire the simplification. And, you know, maybe I can take a lesson or two from him on how to be kind of budget friendly in that area, right?
And a little more Spartan-like, yes.
Okay, there it is. Just dropped it. Pick
that
it up.
That was very nicely done. Yes, yes. And before you made that awesome sagu, which is completely on point and seamless. Today was almost seamless, Carol. I truly appreciate that. I just want to note that if you are Frankenberry, it's like you live every day as if you were camping. And I guess I can appreciate that about a man.
Okay.
And I love camping, so I actually like that.
So on that note, and with that awesome seamless sagu, coming up after the break, we are going to have, now we haven't spoken to our next guest for a couple of years. We had her on during the pandemic. And now that we're coming out of the pandemic, I just wanted to catch up and touch base with her. We're going to be speaking with budget expert and lifestyle expert, Lauren Groopman. She is... she's about all things money, how to get out of debt, how to side hustle, how to create wealth. And she specifically likes to speak to moms about this, but her advice is amazing and it applies to anyone and everyone. So when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking to budget expert Lauren Groopman once again. And I can't wait, frankly.
All right. That sounds good. We've got Lauren Groopman on the way. You're listening to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci, and we will be right back. So please stick around.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. I am Frankenberry, and we're back with our segment number two, which is where we get to interview one of our fantastic guests. And fantastic guest today is Lauren Groopman.
Hello. Yes.
Hello, Lauren. I want to take a second to remind our audience all about you. So let me tell you a little bit about Lauren. Lauren Groopman is the frugal living expert behind the popular money saving blogs at laurengroupman.com. Since 2010, Lauren has been teaching busy moms, and actually I'm going to jump in here and say not just busy moms, like busy everybody, but busy moms, how to budget, get out of debt, and live a life with financial independence. She has a passion for helping others learn how to achieve financial freedom. And she's also been featured on Nightline, The Today Show, Dr. Oz, Fox and Friends, Good Morning America, Yahoo Finance, and a million other media outlets. And I want to say something, that the reason we had Lauren on a couple of years ago during the pandemic, and we loved her then. But since then, and as is often the case, when Carol and I find somebody that we really like, we bring them on as a guest. We stalk them on social media forever and ever. And I've been stalking Lauren. Lauren, I got to tell you, I absolutely love your Instagram game. And here's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you back. One of the reasons why we love you. You take a subject like budgeting, for example, which is, you know, sort of your main bucket. And you take a subject that's usually not fun for people and you make it sexy, fun, and real. Because people can really relate to you. You can make us laugh, but you still have this great information. I urge everybody to go to your Instagram page and follow you and stalk you like I do. So with that, Lauren Groupman, welcome back to Happy Hour.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for the kind words. I have a lot of fun on Instagram. And I think budgeting can be so overwhelming, which is why I try to lighten it up and have fun with it. You know, tone it down a little bit. We don't have to be so serious all the time.
No, exactly. And I think that's why it resonates, and you can help more people that way, because you're not putting people to sleep. Like, people will be scrolling your Instagram and they'll see you doing funny, you see you doing a funny dance or doing something, and they'll want to tune in. Oh, what does she have to say again today? And then you could just give a little nugget that can help a lot of people. And I really appreciate that, because I'm in a field that can sometimes, you know, make people fall asleep too, or be overwhelming, or want people to shut off when you talk about the law or divorce. And you've managed to pull people in. And I think that's very smart.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's fun. I like it.
So I wanted to sort of catch up with you. Like I said, we had you on originally during the pandemic. And now that we're kind of coming out of the other side, I'm noticing with people in my line of work that I don't know if some of us are forever changed. Like, will we ever go back to the spending habits, the relationship habits, the normal going out habits that we had before 2020? And are you noticing for your clients and people you work with, are people financially better off in 2022, or are we less better off? Like, have we changed our, I don't know, rules about money? Where are you finding your clients in 2022 as opposed to 2020?
Yeah. So I think there's actually a couple different things that are going on. Is I see that some people have become more financially more well aware. So with a lot of people moving back home to work, I've seen a lot of people make the decision to stay home because maybe their offices gave them the option now to stay home and work. And so they're saving money on gas. They're saving money on food because they're not going out to eat. They're saving money on going out, you know, with their coworkers at happy hour. So I'm seeing a lot of that change. But then on the other hand, I'm also seeing a lot of people are becoming more lazy in other ways. Like, now they want all of their food delivered to their house. They don't want to go grocery shopping anymore.
Jonna.
they've learned these like ninja skills of DoorDash and Instacart and, you know, grocery pickup. And so that's putting less money in their pocket because now they're having to tip and pay these delivery charges. And so there's kind of been some wins and some losses, I think. But I definitely think that the pandemic really made people really vulnerable with themselves about where their spending was at. And like, you know, people learned how to do more online shopping, and they had to get really resourceful with the money that they had. So there's a lot of new ways to spend money that people learned, but yet they've also learned how to save. So I think it kind of balanced itself out in a way.
One of the things that I'm noticing, which I feel is a little problematic from an employer's standpoint, is like you mentioned, you know, we had a lot of people working from home. We had a lot of people during the pandemic who weren't working at all, right? They were getting unemployment and they stayed home for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. But as an employer looking to add talent, right? To say my office, for example, I think people have learned how to live on less. And so they're choosing to not go back to work and be, have more money and be more productive. And I think long run, that might be a problem. Are you noticing any sort of trends like that? Or is it just me?
Yeah, no, I've noticed that. I think a lot of people, like actually one of my really good friends, he went back to work and he was excited to go back to the office, and he went back to the office and nobody's there. He's the only one that chose to go back to the office. So he's like, wow, that sucked. That was a bad decision, you know? And he's like, I don't know why nobody came back to the office. You know, I wanted like a social life again, but everybody else wanted to stay home. So it seems to be that a lot of people are making the decision to live on less and stay at home. And that's just, they've gotten comfortable working in their PJ pants, you know, from the waist down.
Well, unless you're Frankenberry, because he goes to the studio in his PJ pants. So he's figured out a way to compromise and blend them both. Right, Frankenberry?
Lauren, I have not worn a pair of jeans in 4 years. And that was only because I went to a wedding.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know what? I've been running my business out of my house for the past 13 years. And I'll tell you, like, if I don't get dressed for the day, I'm so not productive. So I'm one of those weird people that I have to, even though I've worked from my house, I have to get dressed and showered and makeup on, or else I don't do anything.
I'm the same way.
I'm wearing sweatpants right now. I'm being productive.
Good for you. I'm not that type of person.
Lauren, this is Carol. Can we back up for a second? And I know we talked about this when you were on before, but it's been a little while. I always like to know myself personally, and I think our listeners, to tell us your story, like to give us the lowdown on what brought you to come and do what it is that you do today, because you have an interesting story.
Yeah. So I'm a drug and alcohol counselor by trade. I worked in the drug and alcohol counseling field right out of college. And after I had kids, I decided it was too stressful. So I stopped counseling and was a stay-at-home mom for a couple of years. And during that time, I found my love for shopping and, you know, was really bored as a, you know, with a new baby. And so I got, me and my husband at the time, we're now divorced, but we got into a ton of debt. And I was like, I probably should figure out how to get out of this and maybe tell him that I've gotten us into a ton of debt. And so that was in 2007. And so I told my husband at the time that we were in a ton of debt, and we worked together to get out of it in 2 years. And from that time, I had found, you know, some other financial professionals that really helped me kind of get started. But I really saw a lack in teaching the practical things, like how to make extra money. Okay, well, tell me how. Show me exactly how to do it. How to meal plan to get out of debt. Okay, show me how to do it. You know, those kind of practical things. And so I came up with some systems and how to teach people exactly how I got out of debt, doing side hustles, meal planning, the strategies and the forms that I use to get out of debt, and budget and budgeting tricks and all that kind of stuff, using a lot of the counseling stuff that I had taught people in the beginning. And so I started a website in 2010, which I can't believe it's been like 12 years since I've been doing this online. And so I started that website in 2010, and I've been teaching people ever since how to get out of debt, and been blessed to, you know, be asked on these national TV shows for the past decade, and really made a career out of this. And now I'm a single mom of four, and I do this full time. It's my full time job. It has been for many, many years. And I'm just incredibly grateful to pass on the information that helped me at a time when I really needed it to help other people.
Yeah, that is awesome. And I know that you have, one of the fun things that I noticed, like on Instagram, one of this, I guess we could call it a side hustle, that you can like resell clothes, which really piqued my interest, because as somebody who lives on no budget whatsoever and spends whatever the heck I want without any consequence until the bills come in, I have crap ton of clothes that I have never worn because I'm one of those people who get the virtual personal stylist, the Stitch Fixes, the Trunk Clubs. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the way I budget is, well, it's cheaper to keep all of these things than to send any of them back and right. never wear them. But I think it would be great to like donate those clothes to somebody who would learn how to side hustle and sell them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love one of my favorite side hustle ideas that I've been doing for over 20 years, actually, is reselling items from thrift stores. I've been doing that since I was in my early 20s. I actually used to go to antique store to like antiques and garage sales and find antiques and resell them on eBay. And now I love going to thrift stores and finding name brand clothing or shoes and selling them on Poshmark or Mercari or eBay. I find it's like a thrill and a treasure hunt. And I love teaching that and doing little, you know, Instagram reels, teaching people what to look for and how to resell them.
I love that idea. Mm-hmm.
That's like shopping to make money. That combines two of my loves.
Exactly. Exactly. And so it's one of those things. It's like, okay, if you love to shop, but you're trying to get out of debt, why don't you shop for things that are going to make you money? It's an investment, right?
Oh my gosh.
And right. I've written three books, and my latest book is called The Recovering Spender. And that talks about how I had issues spending. So this is something that can get out of control if you're not careful, because I could just go and spend and then never sell the stuff. Right. And say, well, I'm buying it, you know, just to sell it. And it helps me with my shopping, but I'm actually not making any money. So, you know, it's not for everybody. If you have like a spending addiction, you know, going and shopping for these things to resell them, but then never reselling, that's not really the point. The point is right. to actually make money doing this.
Exactly.
Lauren, I have a question for you. And maybe it's too broad of a question, but if you were to take what you do to help people and you made a pie out of it, what's the biggest segment? Is the biggest segment issue overspending or under earning, or is it really case by case, or is there an overall pattern?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, to be honest, I think probably about half of it is mindset. It's self-sabotaging behaviors. And so a lot of what I teach in my courses, I really start with mindset training of why do you keep on doing the same things over and over again and expecting different results? And, you know, that's where my drug and alcohol counseling really comes into play with this.
Oh, yeah.
I use a lot of the same issues that people with addiction struggle with, because I can use that same counseling techniques to help people with their budgets and getting out of debt. And so it's really a mindset shift of how willing are you to give up the things that you really love right now for a greater good. So I do a lot of training on that. Like, what's your why? Your why has to be greater than your spending right now. You know, why do you want to get out of debt? And so we start with that. So that's a huge piece. And then once you have that, it's like you can do anything, right? And so it's really just about setting up that budget every month, a new one every single month. And then not giving up on your why and your dream and your goals, and not being stuck, because you can be stuck in your spending, but a lot of people, I think it's a good point that you brought up, a lot of people are stuck in what they earn too, and their limited beliefs in that they can ask for a raise or get a better job or start a side hustle, and they're just not willing to take that extra time every single week to do something. You know, when I was in debt, I had to... You know, one of the big issues that I had was I was in an MLM company and I wasn't making any money. And I had a free car with this company, but yet I wasn't making any money. So I had to trade the car in and get a job at a steakhouse working five nights a week. And it was so humbling for me to do that. And it was embarrassing, but it was like I was so willing to make the change that I was willing to do whatever it took to make that change. I didn't care what people thought about me anymore. And I had to like go and work at a steakhouse with all these jerks. And, you know, I was the only girl that worked there, and I had to fight for my position. And, you know, it was hard, but those are the decisions we have to make. So the mindset is probably at least half of it.
Wow. And how brilliant. It's just amazing how the universe works, right? That you studied that, and mm-hmm. had you not, you wouldn't be nearly as effective as you are today at what you do.
Right. And I think that's what sets me apart, you know, as a financial educator too, is that, you know, I'm not just talking numbers. It's like, well, let's talk about the deep stuff. And, you know, with my podcast, which is called The Hard Money Talk Show, you know, I talk a lot about that. We, on the podcast, we talk about the hard money stuff. Like, I talk about addictions and overspending and, you know, all sorts of cross addictions, gambling. I've had gambling addicts on there. I've had, you know, just variety of different types of really, really difficult money conversations on there. Cause I'm not scared to talk about the hard stuff. I think people need that.
That's one of the things that, like I said, I've recently gotten into your podcast, and it's great for that reason. Cause you're answering the questions that people are just maybe too afraid to ask or too embarrassed to ask or don't know how to ask. Mm-hmm. And that's like real life. That's real life. And you just reminded me of something, because one of your most recent episodes was about, you had a friend on there who was talking about divorcing a narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
And I handle a lot of divorces for a living, obviously. And along those, not specifically with narcissists, but one of the things I find, and would you counsel anybody who came to you, like, for example, when two people are getting together in a relationship, you don't have to be married, you're getting together in a relationship, and one of them makes maybe a whole lot more than the other one. Are there, I mean, I find that in the end, that always comes back to bite one or the other or both. But do you have any advice for people who have disparate incomes who want to get together? Like, is it impossible to have a relationship if you don't kind of get on the same financial page, or have you not noticed anything like that?
You know what? I don't think that there's any issue with the financial piece. I think it's just knowing the red flags of financial abuse. And that's one of the things that, you know, I'm actually going on tour doing speaking engagements at colleges to talk to college students about financial abuse and the red flags of financial abuse when it comes to dating. And that if you can figure out what those look like, you know, like any relationship, you just have to learn if you're a good communicator or not. If you're in a healthy relationship, if you can communicate, if there are healthy boundaries, then finances, if you can communicate about that and have healthy boundaries with that, then there really shouldn't be a reason to have any issues, right? But if you're going into a relationship and one person, you know, doesn't have money, and they're asking the person that does have money for the money and, you know, for their stuff, and the person that's making more money is uncomfortable with that and they don't communicate it, I mean, that's when things are going to get tricky, right? So I think it just comes down to knowing your personal boundaries of having your own bank account all the time. Don't sign somebody up, you know, to co-sign loans, and, you know, have strong financial boundaries from the get-go and be able to communicate about it. And I'm sure you see a lot of the bad stories, right? And I've seen some good stories, but it all comes down to the communication and having boundaries from the very, very beginning.
And if I can add something to that, I think it also, I agree with communication is key. But I would also say that no matter whether you're the quote moneyed spouse or the non-money spouse, or you both make the same amount of money, doesn't matter. One party should not know all of the financial information and structure and payments, and the other one be in the dark. Like, if somebody else is actually physically writing the checks or paying the bills, the other one should know how much they are, how they get paid, how to get online to do it. I would strongly encourage that, because nothing is worse than when you have somebody crying in front of you who has no idea what their financial picture looks like, mm-hmm. and they're about to get divorced. It's probably, it just adds an element of fear to an already stressful situation.
Yep, I agree with that totally.
Yeah, that's always. And then the other thing that I see too, and just maybe we're getting off topic a little bit, is when people are getting divorced and one of them does hold all the money cards, they resent the other one even more because they'll say, well, why do I got to split my retirement account? You know, I did all the working. She didn't do anything. She just mm-hmm. raised our five kids and made sure the house was clean and had a roof over our head. But that's nothing. You know, right. So I see that far too much. So in terms of your podcast is actually, which again, it's called the Hard Money Talks podcast. And I love it because you have such a variety of guests and topics. And I encourage people to actually check out your Hard Money Talks podcast. Are you only in your second season? Like it's a fairly new podcast?
Yep, it's a fairly new podcast. And actually, it's funny. It was actually inspired by Rachel Ray. I go on her show all the time. And I did a segment with her back in October of last year. And we were talking about financial trauma and all of that. And she, you know, before we started taping, she was like, Lauren, like, you need to talk more about this. And so me and her were kind of talking about it. And I was like, you know what, I should. And I had a podcast years ago with my ex-husband before we divorced. And because he was a big part of the website back then. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to start a new one. So yeah, I'm in season two. So we've done 15 episodes so far. And it's really kind of doing very well. I just did a doctor's episode on one of the podcasts. We did one on financial trauma a couple weeks ago, based on one of my podcast episodes. And so it's getting a lot of national media attention as well. So, and I have a blast doing it. I have some really amazing topics coming up for season two as well.
Good for you.
Yeah,
that is awesome.
It's fun. I love it because I don't know. I think that money shame grows in the dark, right? So if I can bring mm-hmm. these topics to light and give people a voice that that they don't have maybe the courage to talk about, that maybe they can start sharing their money stories and feel some power, and that shame can kind of, you know, wash away and they might feel like they have a voice again.
See, and that's awesome. And that's another reason why I encourage people to follow you on is Instagram your major social media platform?
They can find me anywhere. I mean, I have a YouTube channel and I'm on Facebook under Lauren Grootman. Everything's under Lauren Grootman, which is spelled G-R-E-U-T-M-A-N. So they can find me on there. So, and I have a YouTube channel with videos and a Facebook page. But right now I'm having most fun on Instagram.
Yes. And it shows. And is that how people, so you can actually work with people if they wanted to connect with you, Lauren, and get some maybe one-on-one advice or know how they could book you to speak, how would they best find you?
Yeah, they can go to my website, laurengrootman.com. I have a contact page on there, or they can message me on Instagram if they want to book me to speak, or they can message me. I have a free challenge. It's called the Recovering Spender Challenge on my website. If people just kind of want to, you know, get their finances back on track. It's a 5-video challenge that they can sign up for and take in, you know, a day if they want to. And it kind of helps you regroup and get your finances back on track. So people can check that out just at laurengrootman.com and sign up for it right on the homepage.
Oh, that is awesome. Lauren, we are so glad that you joined us again. We really appreciate this very helpful information, and you're just so relatable and down to earth and fun. So when people think mm-hmm. that budgeting can't be fun, or getting out of debt can't be fun, or making some more money in side hustles can't be fun, you're wrong. And you just need to go to laurengrootman.com and visit you on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and for some fantastic tips and some fun stuff. And they can do it. Anybody can do it.
Yep. If I can do it, anybody can do it. So thank you for having me on today.
Thank you, Lauren.
Yes. Thank you very much, Lauren. And you're listening to Happy Hour here with John Spilborg and Carol Pesci. And as I've said in the past, we are not done yet. That is a warning. So please know that segment 3 is still on the way. Stick around.
Donna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Donna and Carol.
And good morning one more time, and welcome back to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilborg and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frankenberry.
I still love that after all these years. So, hey, Lauren, she was great. gave folks some nice ideas on side hustles, how to make a couple extra bucks.
Well, and
it's so brilliant.
Yes.
I think it's so brilliant that she encompasses the psychological factor, because there always is an element of that when it comes to money, always.
money and weight loss and relationships like all of it. And we have to realize that in order to like take a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. I am digging the thrift store idea.
Seriously,
honestly, who couldn't do that? Yeah, who couldn't do that? Go and kind of filter through. You pick up stuff for $1, $3, whatever. And
well, you know, what's funny is the website she mentioned. All I imagine from the website she mentioned is like really hoity-toity rich people using those websites and saying, I am never going into a thrift store myself. Maybe I can find somebody else to do it for me. You know? I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like. I mean, it's you almost say to yourself, man, I feel bad for the thrift store. You know, something she was able to go in there, you know, buy this blouse for $2 and then resell on, you know, on eBay or some special website for like $30 or $40. It's like, I feel bad for the thrift store.
Yeah. Well, if they're too stupid to, you know, not put a good price tag on it, then what are you going to do? Somebody's got to do it.
I know. Understood.
But yeah, like I think there's a whole, I mean, I'm serious, you guys. Like I donate clothes all the time, you know, for free because I get those. I subscribe to those clothing, companies that send you clothes. And sometimes they're not stupid. They know that if they give you a big enough discount to keep 5 pieces of clothing, sometimes it's worth it, but then you have clothing that you're not going to use. So somebody should get good use out of it. And if somebody else can make a couple bucks off it, I'm totally down with that.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, she's good. And I do think that, and you had mentioned off air, Carol, but we might as well say it on air, that we have another good friend, Jeannie Kelly, who is a credit guru and credit expert. And I think putting those two together would be like peanut butter in your chocolate, you know?
They
could do some real good together. So that's also a good idea.
No doubt.
So anyway, all right. Well, I guess, I don't know. How much time do we have? That was
I guess we can say we have no time left because I'm going to say goodbye.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at the clock, but sometimes I forget.
Okay.
So, all right.
All right. Well, thanks to Lauren Grootman for joining us today. And she's been here before, and I'm sure we'll have her back again as well. And for Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci, I'm Frankenberry. And thank you so much for joining us today on Happy Hour. And we'll be back next week.
Maybe next week, Carol won't need an oxygen tank and a box of tissues. Maybe that'll be the thing for next week.
I was having a coughing fit during the show. I kept muting myself.
Yes, I know. I noticed that. But you sound a little bit better now there, Pesky.
Okay. I'm good. Still breathing.
Okay. Well,
yeah, that's a plus.
That is a plus. Still breathing and walking above ground.
Always a good start, right?
Yes. All right. Again, for Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci, I'm Frankenberry. Have a good week. We'll talk to you again next week. Be good.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.